with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And today I have a special interview, and the subject is short stories. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Ambassador Michael Oren, who has written a brilliant book of short stories, and I wanted him to come back so we could discuss the subject. I know he loves writing short stories, and his collection is called The Night Archer and Other Stories. It is an amazing collection. I'm so happy to welcome you back, Ambassador.
Absolutely delighted to be with you again.
Well, thank you for joining me. This has been, November is in America, National Novel Writing Month. And of course, a lot of people started writing, and they were asking me early back in October and earlier for recommendations of books they should read. And I said that one of the best ways is to start with short stories. And The Night Archer is one of the best collections I have ever read. So I am so happy
that wonderful.
We can talk about it. My listeners already know I've been talking about you a lot, that you are the former Israeli ambassador to the United States. And even while you were an ambassador, you were busy writing short stories.
I was indeed. It was a state secret at the time, but yes, I was. I try to write every single day, getting up as early as possible. You know, I say to people who are aspiring writers, if you can write 10 minutes a day, do it.
It is a discipline and a craft. Tell us your history of starting short story writing pretty early on in your life.
Oh, I started as a teenager. I started with poetry, and I published my first poem in 17 magazine when I was 14 years old. That was my achievement. And I wanted to write short stories. I love the form of short story. It's like the haiku of fiction. A short story writer has to do in 3 pages what a novelist does in 300 pages, developing characters, plot lines, dialogue, all tremendous, tremendous discipline. And I enjoy it very, very much. I wish there were a wider audience. There are very few publications today that publish short stories. Once upon a time, there were dozens and dozens. Today, there may be a dozen altogether. And I hope the genre comes back because I think it's a classic form.
It is wonderful to read short stories, you know, people who are traveling. I think having a short story and just stopping for a few minutes of relaxation to read a short story, perhaps while you have lunch, preferably outside under the trees. You know, we have these devices we can carry with us, and a short story is really ideal.
And my short stories are sometimes very, very short. As short as a page. The Night Archer has 51 short stories in them, and it's not a particularly long book, so very, very short stories, and certainly something you can read before going to bed or, you know, while you're having your breakfast cereal. And each one is a contained story in and of itself. I set out to write 51 completely different stories. So you have ghost stories and history stories and mystery and murder stories and, of course, love stories. Many short stories writers, the collections will be around a central theme. I'm a huge Elizabeth Strout fan. I just read her most recent book. And, you know, most of her stories take place in sort of a small town, Maine. Or if you're Tim and Brian, it's going to take place in Vietnam. I didn't want to be limited by any place, any time. And to me, short story writing is also the ultimate form of freedom because I could be anywhere, anyone, at any time in history that I want to be. And that's amazing. It's the ultimate escape for oneself.
The stories range there. Some are touching, some are a little strange, and all of them, you paint these wonderful pictures. I got such a kick out of so many of them. When I was reading them, sometimes I was just laughing. So really unusual and not expected, and I loved it. And I thought, wow, this is a great way to put in all the things that you learn in life, all the things that you see in life, and put down on paper. One of my favorite was The Good Table. I love that. I thought, oh, this is so good.
I'll tell you about it. In all my short stories, I'm trying to do 3 things. One, I'm trying to tell a story that's going to be entertaining for my reader. Secondly, I want to draw on my experiences. So The Good Table draws on my experience as an ambassador in Washington. It's about a social climbing couple. And people like that, believe it or not, really exist. Their whole life is getting to good tables in Washington. And the expression is, to get good table, you have to give good table. And they're trying to figure out which tables they can get to. Ultimately, they want to get to the White House. That's the ultimate table. And it's about the social climbing. So it's drawing on experience. But there are different experiences. I was, you know, a soldier, so I have a war story, a father, a grandfather's family stories. academia, I spent time in, you know, teaching at university. So it'll draw on these experiences. The third part of the story, though, is the most important, and that is I want to say in each story something about us. I want to say something about the human condition. I want to say something about love, about relationships, about reality. And in that story, for example, the question of what is reality? Because here you have these socialites who really are making their own reality, but creating a reality which people in Washington actually believe. Everyone seems to believe that this couple actually has influence, when in fact they have none.
It's so clever, and I think people should read it. I think forevermore when they think about Washington, now having experienced it on a small scale myself, I thought, this is so real. This is so
and it's clever. Actually real. Actually, it's based on a real couple. And these socialites in Washington will hire advisors, consultants, about how to get good table. And this couple does. They acquire these consultants. It's real.
And you write it just perfectly. It's spot on, I can tell you. It is so
Thank
good.
You.
I love it. There are so many that are just great. And I love the eighth day, day eight. People never think of day eight. You know, we got the 7 days, and then we sort of stop it. We don't think, well, there was a day eight. What was going on?
One of my themes for me is I'm a person of spirituality and belief, and I write a lot about God, and I write about God's relationship with humanity. That story is the question about how God came around to give endowing human beings with souls. And what's interesting about the story is that the author of the idea is not God, but Satan. How Satan convinces God to give human beings souls, and why. And it's a story that grew out of my own faith and thinking about the relationship between God and people and good and evil.
What I love about your stories, as you said, you were a soldier, so you've been to combat. One of the things that's so common is that men don't need to read books, men shouldn't be poets, men shouldn't want to write. It's so strange to me because throughout history, so many men have been just great poets. And this love for words, they've sort of made it a joke that it's not a manly thing to do. It's very bad for men because there's a lot of release that you can have in your writing.
It's so true. It's so true. And I also wanted to be, you know, I wasn't an English major in college. Actually, I was a major in Middle Eastern history. And I wanted to fashion my own life after someone like, you know, Hemingway, or my favorite writer, American writer, is Ambrose Bierce. If you've ever read him, I strongly recommend you read him. He was a veteran of the Battle of Shiloh and the Civil War, a man of action. He actually disappeared in the Mexican desert in 1913 looking for Pancho Villa. They never found his body. He's a wonderful short story writer. His short stories written in the 1880s, they read like they were written this morning. They're postmodern. But I like that kind of life. And what can I say? It sounds very politically incorrect, but it was a very manly life. These were people who went out. And yes, they fought in wars, and yes, they were adventurers, and yes, they were writers, and did not feel there was anything unmanly about sitting down and writing a short story.
To be able to put it down on paper, it can relieve you of a lot of tension, a lot of the angst that you might normally have. Since I started this radio program, I have been encouraging people to write. I think it calms you down when you know that you're going to sit down and write.
It's also very redeeming. One of the early stories in the Night Archer is a story about a father who has an autistic child, and he's trying to figure out how to relate to this autistic child who's in the park, in the playground, playing. It's called a story called D. And I had dyslexia, severe dyslexia as a kid. I have severe dyslexia as an adult. It doesn't go away. And so I know it is to grow up with learning disabilities, but I also had children who had learning disabilities. And so in this story, I'm working out my relationship with my children as a father. I'm also working out a relationship with myself. And it's a tough story, not an easy story, because dealing with learning disabilities is not easy all the time.
It is a tough story. But again, putting it down on paper and sharing it with people that they can then look at it from their point of view, if they've dealt with it, or if they have some other problem in their lives, to realize that putting it down in paper really helps.
It helps tremendously. It's therapeutic, it's redemptive, it's meditative, it's all of the above. To me, it's just an inestimable blessing.
Really, everybody should be people of the book, people who put down and save their memories, share their memories, and you never know the impact they will have on the reader.
Indeed. And every once in a while, someone will come up to me and say, thank you for writing this. you don't know how that spoke. You don't know. And I, especially, you know, for writers who are struggling and, you know, maybe not making the New York Times bestseller list, maybe it's better to reach that one person and transform their lives than it is to reach 100,000 readers and not transform their lives.
If they write a book and they share it with their families, this can be a treasure that the family will keep forever.
Indeed. And I'm aware of that all the time, that I'm writing for future generations and my own family.
Let's talk about live in fame and dive in flames. What I like about so many of the stories that at the same time, as you said, you're writing at different times in history. And so people can learn a lot about history simply from these stories.
So Live in Flames is a triptych. I have several stories that are three stories put into one. And this triptych takes place at the height of World War II, and it deals with an obsession I've had as a historian, and that is that during World War II, America and the Allies invested hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in air power and bombers, B-17s, B-29s, and they killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people with these bombers, but they actually didn't have any impact on the outcome of the war. And yet the technology existed in the 1940s not to invest in bombers, but to invest in guided missiles. There was television back then. There were missiles back then. The Germans invented the missiles. And you could have shortened that whole war and saved countless lives just by investing in a missile that could have taken out Adolf Hitler. So that's pretty much what this story is about. It's about an inventor in Kansas whose own son is preparing to go into the war as an airman, as a bomber. And the average lifespan of a bomber was about 3 weeks. And so this inventor is working against the clock, but he's also obsessed with developing a guided missile. And he's trying to show this missile to the military and convince them to stop making these bombers and to invest in missiles. You know, keep in mind, America invented the atom bomb in 3 years. When you put your mind to it, you can invent some pretty extraordinary things. And you go from that story to the story of an actual a waste gunner on a B-17 and his life. And then you go from that story to a story of a young Frenchman on the Normandy coast who is a mussel fisherman who is in love with a girl in the village. And how these three stories come together is the plot. Live in Fame, Die in Flames, it's taken from the second line. The title is taken from the second line of the Air Force anthem, you know, off we go into the wild blue yonder. So if you look at the second stanza, that line is in there.
Oh, well, I enjoyed that story for many reasons. For years, I hadn't heard the name Grumman. And then last, I had a guest on who flew a Grumman across the United States and back at the age of 71. Suddenly, the name Grumman keeps coming up, and I had almost forgotten that my husband met Mr. Grumman. As you said, a lot of the stories do have a Jewish theme to them, this yearning for some understanding what it's all about, right?
Well, for example, when I was in government, I did a state visit to Lithuania. And I was the deputy to the prime minister in charge of diplomacy, so I was sent to Lithuania. And my maternal grandmother, was from a small village in Lithuania. And they were very excited to hear about this. But everyone in this village in 1941 was taken out and shot. My grandmother, of course, got out before this. But there were no survivors from this village. And so the foreign minister of Lithuania offered to take me there. And he took me there. And I went to this village. And the main street is called Synagogue Street. There are two synagogues. One is a bakery and one is a pigsty today. And I came out of this village and I said, okay, how do I somehow deal? How do I process this experience? And it took me a while, but the result was another triptych. It was a story made up of three different chapters in the life of a family from this village. And the story is called Anisht, which is the name of this village in Yiddish. And it goes to two generations, through a Talmudic scholar, through a survivor of the Holocaust, to a corrupt politician in Israel. So I'm drawing on my historical knowledge, but also my political knowledge here as a politician, and comes together in this triptych called Anisht, which comes from a very deep place. The story of that village, a visit to my grandmother's village in Lithuania.
Well, it is. It's a great story. And another connection. My husband's father came from Lithuania. So So over the years, of course, we've always taken interest in what happened there. Luckily, he did get to Israel. He was a young pioneer. So my husband was a Sabra. So, you know, so we have that connection, too. And the Grumman. It's funny. My husband was a student of Moshe Aaron. So
who I knew quite well.
Yeah.
Great and revered. He was great, an extraordinary man.
Oh, he was absolutely amazing. And I often think of him, you know, during these very troubling times. And I think the great thing about reading these short stories is we do, in a way, the world is at this moment is so overwhelming that to take this break and to read some short stories and to know that sort of life's challenges people have faced before, and that's what short stories do. In a few pages, you can really bring to life some very important subjects.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I'm finishing up my next collection of short stories, which I hope to publish next year. And again, I'm dealing with some of the same themes. An interesting theme in the next collection of short stories is the Bible again. And I've decided to give voice to people in the Bible who don't really get a voice. So I've told the story of David and Goliath from the perspective of Goliath. I've told the story of Bathsheba and David from Bathsheba. And I've told the story of Exodus from the perspective of Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells the story of Exodus. And that has been tremendous fun, but also very deeply meaning. It's not just a story. Pharaoh is dealing with the question, okay, who has free will? Does anybody have free will? Because Pharaoh in the Exodus story doesn't have free will. God hardens his heart. And why does Pharaoh have to pay the price for that? So these are deep questions, and these short stories enable me again to be anywhere, anybody, anything I want to be. As you know, there's one story in the Night Archer where it's told from the perspective of a tiger in the jungle, who has just attacked a human being. Right? You can be anything. It's great.
And you can have
so much fun.
Exactly, so much fun. And I hope that people will listen to me and listen to you and read your stories, because it is so important nowadays. That one of the things, of course, I'm so worried about young people not reading enough. And I think sometimes a short story might be just what they need to start with. And indeed, when we were young, we read short stories. I mean, that's how we started. And so I'm hoping that we can get through to more people. Of course, one of the things I want just to mention, that to be a good writer, you also have to read. So you read a lot when you were young, yes?
And I still read. And yeah. I used to be much more methodical about it. I used to set out my reading for like a year and a half. When I was in the Army, I decided to read all the Russian masters. So, you know, you wear a gun belt. And in my rear pouch of my gun belt, I always had a Tolstoy, I had a Chekhov, I had a Dostoevsky. While everyone else is cleaning their guns, I got a chance to read some great short stories by Tolstoy. He was a great short story writer. And so you learn the craft. It's Mark Twain saying that it's 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. He's not wrong. So much of it is craft. But also, for my advice to young readers, to young writers, is not just to read, but be prepared. It's a rough field. You get rejected. You get rejected sometimes quite brutally. And to this day, I still get rejected here and there. It comes with the turf. It does.
But it's a learning experience. So you just keep plodding along and learn that discipline, learn that craft. There are things that you can do to get better. But the most important thing is to get it on the paper in the first place.
Sure, and then that's a process. Because then you get it, you send it to an editor, you send it to friends who read and give back comments, and sometimes the comments are tough. But just remember, life is short stories. Our life is composed of short stories. They're the pixels of our lives. It's how many times do you come home and say, "You're not going to believe what happened to me today." That's a short story.
Exactly.
A friendship as a child. That's a short story. It's one of the things I love about the Bible. The Bible's a collection of short stories.
Well, you know, I am so thrilled that you joined me again today. I look forward to the release of the next book, and you have to make sure you tell me so that you're here on Pub Day. Pub Day is always so exciting for an author, and that's what I love to do. I love to help authors promote their books, and I'm trying to get out there more and more now that the pandemic's over, as I used to do, go to a lot of events so I can talk to people about books and about reading and the fun and the joy of it. And you certainly, Ambassador Michael Oren, you have discovered the joy of writing, and I'm so happy that you've shared it with my listeners today.
I've been delighted. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Such a pleasure.
It's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now. Bye. All right, everybody. This, you know, as I said, when Michael Oren was on before, his short stories are absolutely marvelous, and I want to go straight. Good. I can't believe how good I would have been. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.